guys, do you like video games? Do you like heavy metal, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Time to rock out with your geek out. Metal Geeks! Welcome, Geekazoids. Here are your hosts, Carrie G and John Michael. Geek it out, fellas.
Hey, it's Ralph Garman. You are listening to Metal Geeks, and I must say, you've made an excellent choice.
Hi there. This is the Mad Hatter telling you to listen to Metal Geeks Podcast. Rock out with your geek out. But get the hell out of here, you silly bastard.
Welcome, everyone, to a brand new episode of the Metal Geeks Podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie G, and I have the privilege, as a very special guest host this week, to bring back Larry Roberts from November's Doom. How you doing, sir?
What's going on?
Yep. Thank you for doing this. Our co-host, as I guess a lot of you guys know, is getting married next week, so he has a lot on his plate. So instead of not doing an episode, we brought back one of our favorite guests.
Oh, I'm a favorite, huh?
And then we asked you to come on.
Yeah, I thought you just couldn't figure out anybody else that would be willing to do this shit. No.
No, man. Well, you're number one choice. Because you are the epitome of metalness and geekiness, just like us, man.
Yeah, I'm definitely. I don't know about the epitome of metalness, but I sure am a fucking geek. That's for sure. So I'm down with that. But I was more than happy to come in and help since you're co-host is such a sorry sucker getting talked into getting hitched and everything. So
yeah, I've gone through all that.
I mean, I say you're not going to say anything because I know you've got your significant other probably staring at you like, don't you dare agree with what you just said.
Daggers, man. Daggers.
See, I'm in my car right now, so I'm safe. I'm protected from mine. But
no, nah, man, I wish nothing but the best for him. He's really excited. It's going to be I was hoping to go down to Florida. I'm actually on spring break because where I work at a school, so of course we're closed this week, so I can't work. I was hoping to go down there, but schedule wise and a bunch of other stuff, it just didn't happen.
No, understood. No, I wish him all the best, man. He's starting a new adventure, so.
And he'll be back soon, and he'll be able to tell us about, hopefully not too many details about his wedding. But
I don't think we need to know about all that.
Exactly, man. So let's get into some stuff about some new stuff that's going on with you. We had you on a few months ago, and you've had a lot of stuff going on in your professional career recently. Yep. Let's talk about that before we start geeking out.
Okay.
So I guess, first of all, new album. You guys just finished recording it. Tell me how that went.
It went really good. Yeah, we're really, really pleased. Right now, the album is over in Sweden getting mixed by Dan Swano again. We've used him. Oh, gosh, man, we've been using him for a while now. And he's, man, if it ain't broke, you know, don't fix it. He's just so good at what he does. And he knows us so well. And it gets better every time. So we've been getting the mixes back from him. You know, we do everything over the internet, you know, welcome to the modern age.
Right.
So we do all the mixing and mastering over the internet at least. And, man, I'm blown away. I mean, I was hoping that this was going to come out the way I wanted it to, and I'm not disappointed at all. And so I'm really looking forward to all you guys hearing it. Cause it's, I don't even know how to explain it. Like I told you in the last time we talked several months ago when we were still in the writing process, I mean, it's the same but different, which I guess is what we can hope for. You know, I don't think anybody's going to listen to it and go, this isn't November's Doom. But there's definitely some different stuff. It doesn't sound like a photic. It's different. So I don't even know how to even explain it. It's just one of those things you're going to have to hear. It definitely turned out doomier and darker, but not necessarily in the traditional like doomy sense. It doesn't sound like we went back to 1995 or anything like that, but yeah, it's just a different vibe overall, a darker vibe on this album. So I'm really curious to see what people think. As you know, the title's announced now, the album's called Bled White. And, of course, Paul has a whole meaning and concept behind that and everything, but that's for him to explain, not me. You know, so
and if
go ahead
if people want to actually get a little bit behind the scenes, you guys, like you did with the last album, have a bunch of YouTube behind the scenes videos.
Yep. Yeah. What I've been doing is, I mean, I compiled, oh God, hours and hours worth of stuff. And a lot of it is boring or just us screwing up, you know, screwing takes up, things like that. And there's a little bit of that in there, but I mean, I've been sifting through all this stuff, you know. Well, first I needed a little bit of a break because right. I've just been so, you know, wrapped up in this for so long now. But I got back from the studio, and after a couple of days, I started going through all this stuff. And what I've been doing is every week putting up a 10-minute video, you know, in installments, you know, starting with how we started with the drum tracking, and then the next one was guitars, and then this last one I just put up was more guitars and bass, and then I think the next episode will probably have, like, keyboards and acoustic guitars, and I think finally Paul will make his appearance on there with some vocals and stuff, and, you know, and then there's a lot of goofiness, and I'm sure you've caught a little bit of that, you know, a little,
oh, yeah.
There's always, especially with this band, there's always some goofy stuff. So I like to throw some humor on there, and some of it I think goes over people's heads, but that's okay.
I love I remember the first one you guys were just sitting around the couch and you were playing, I guess, off a laptop or something, like trying to get people to guess old TV show theme songs.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying. Well, the funny thing about it is that day, it's like, that was when we were doing the first basic tracking of, like, the drums with scratch guitars and everything. So it was myself with the other guitarist Vito and our drummer Gary, and then the engineer Chris. Well, Chris and I are both, you know, older guys, and Vito and Gary are the younglings, you know. I mean, Gary's 27 or something like that, you know. So wow. There's a huge gap between he and I because I'm older. And I'm playing these theme songs just to see if he knows what the hell they are. And he didn't know. He had no idea. And I'm talking classic shit, you know, like Dukes of Hazzard and all this. And he just had no fucking clue. It was funny and sad at the same time. So I was just trying to, basically I was just trying to annoy the shit out of him. So, and it worked. So
now when you guys are in the studio, who is doing all the filming for you?
We take turns.
Okay.
You know, we take turns. If we were going to have somebody come in and do it more professionally, like actual professional bands do, unlike us. You know, I mean, I don't know. I guess we're professional on some levels. But no, I mean, we thought about having somebody come in and really properly doing it. And then we just, mm-hmm. we just realized that it just gets in the way. It just becomes too difficult. I mean, we're so wrapped up in what we're doing, and we're such like a little, we don't really have like an open door policy when we do our recording. You know, some bands don't mind that. They'll let, you know, press and video and friends and hangers on and everybody come and hang out at the studio. And we're not like that. We like to, you know, for me, it's time to work. And I mean, there's still plenty, as you saw, plenty of joking around amongst us and everything. But in the end, yeah, we ended up deciding, let's keep it a closed session. So we just pulled out, like, you know, the iPhones and the digital cameras and stuff, and started filming little bits and pieces ourselves. 'Cause we kind of knew we knew best what we wanted captured and what we didn't. And
sure.
So yeah, that's how we did it. And that's why you see it. It's rough and raw and it's grainy and stuff, but I think it kind of captures the mood of it, you know, 'cause it's not slick. It's not overly produced. It's just, that's it. You know, if you were sitting on the couch with me while I'm tracking my guitars, that's it, man. That's what it is. So.
And you do the post work, the editing on it?
Yeah. Yeah, I just have like a simple, you know, movie editing program I use and everything. And I mean, I'm doing it really just totally kamikaze quick, throw it on there. I mean, you know, it doesn't,
right.
The longest part of the whole process, like I said, is sifting through all the footage, mm-hmm. because like I said, we just set things up on tripods or, you know, Vito's sitting there holding the camera while I'm tracking or whatever, and I just let it roll, you know. And so I have to sift through all this stuff just to find, you know, the one good take, you know, or the one funny thing that Chris said or something like that, that I'm like, okay, that people like that or whatever. That's the worst part. The editing part and putting it all together, I just do really quick, and I know it's not the greatest job, but I'm getting a little better at it as I go too. So
that's what my job is. That's what I do every day, is, you know, editing and filming and stuff. So I definitely can understand.
Yeah. You know, if we were doing something like, let's put it this way, if we were doing something that I was actually trying to put out there as a product to sell or something like that, you know, I'd most definitely be putting a little more time and effort into it and everything. But yeah, like I said, this is just like a little extra, like, here, you know, again, it's, here's a little fun thing for you to watch just to keep people interested and have a laugh. And it's probably, I mean, up until the album comes out, which I, at this point, it's looking like it's going to be sometime in the middle of summer. I mean, that's going to be the only previews you're going to get of the material. You know, I'm sure we might put out like a pre-release like track or something like that, but that's still probably not going to be for a couple of months or so. So
that's a pretty quick turnaround, though, from a recording in February and then having a summer release.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, knock on wood, that's, I'm hoping that it's going to be out. That's what we and the label are shooting for, because we've got tour plans, you know, we've got shows, different things that we want to do. And some of it's already, you know, in the process of being booked. I mean, we got announced, I don't know if you saw, we got announced that we're doing the Grass Pop Metal Meeting Festival in Belgium.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the last week of June. So I don't know if the album will be out by then, but we, if it can, it'd be wonderful. But if not, then we want it to be like right around that time, you know. So that, we're really trying to get things moving here. Travis Smith is doing the artwork for us again. He hasn't worked with us for several years, and
a brilliant choice.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's interesting. It's kind of, it's a departure from the way the last couple albums have looked, you know, because they weren't Travis. I mean, you see this, and it's definitely Travis. It's a throwback, but it's not. I don't know. It suits the album. That's all I can say. When you hear it and you see it, and you're gonna, it's all part of a vibe, you know. And yeah, I think you'll catch on to that. So, we're hoping that we'll be able to do it, but with, you know, we've got the major label distribution for the record, which is great. But the downside of it is that the majors make the smaller, you know, subsidiaries like the End Records. We have to kind of wait, you know, like, I mean, somebody like a Madonna could turn in an album, and realistically she could tell her label, I want this out in 3 weeks, you know, and if they wanted to, they could do that. With us, you know, I think there's like a mandatory like 4 month or 5 month waiting period between when the album is turned in and approved and when it actually gets a street date. So we might be a little optimistic that it's going to come out at end of June, early July, but that's what we're hoping for. So
right on, man. And you guys recently just played the 70,000 Tons of Metal Cruise again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's just amazing to me. 40 bands on a cruise ship.
Yeah. It's a little overwhelming. Yeah. The cruise we did back in 2012, that was the brutal offshoot one. They did that Barge to Hell, which was great. You know, it was awesome. But that was all more extreme underground bands, whereas 70,000 Tons, for those that don't know, is a little bit more across the board. There's power metal, classic metal, death metal, black metal. There's more of a mix, which is cool. I like it that way personally. Yeah, the cruise is really cool. It's just, it's a lot to do. You'd think that a week it's not even really a week. It's like 4 or 5 days, but
right,
you'd think that would be more than enough time. But man, I still ended up missing so much stuff that went on because I, you know, I was just.
Can imagine, man. Busy. Just a regular cruise is. There's so much to do just on a regular cruise ship, and then throwing 40 bands on there that you want to see every performance.
Right. You know, I mean, it's not. I'm not going to say it's like super expensive because I think actually for what you're getting you're getting a pretty good deal. People spend a lot of money and plan all year for this thing, and I really honestly do feel like they get their money's worth out of it. I commend Andy and the 70,000 tons people, man. I really think that they put on an amazing show. They're very professional. When I don't know if you read or you caught when. We every band plays two sets, and when we went to go on and play our main stage set, which is outdoors on the deck, weather had been beautiful all week, and then the band Cripper played right before us. It was perfectly fine. They had a huge crowd. Weather was great. They got done waiting for them to take their stuff off stage so that we can start sound checking everything. I'm not even fucking kidding. The minute I walked on stage, a torrential downpour started.
So you guys did really, you literally brought the doom and gloom.
Yeah, we brought the rain. Wah, wah. You know, yeah, it's like we jinxed ourselves writing that damn song. You know that because it really it does follow us around, man. I mean, I walked up the stairs onto the stage and. The minute both my feet hit that stage, all of a sudden rain came down. And then it was a mad scramble to cover everything up and, you know, because they've got tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment up there. And kind of screwed us over because the rain, not the fest, the rain screwed us over because then, like a lot of people, you know, 70% of the crowd went running indoors and everything. And then, you know, this huge crowd that had formed out there, you know, that would have most likely mostly been there when we were going to play had all scrambled. And we got a lot of it back. I mean, we've still played to a really good crowd, but it just screwed everything up. And the stage was all wet. So it's like I had to be real mindful of, you know, moving around and not wanting to fall on my ass. And then plus, because of the storm, man, that boat started rocking. Let me tell you, like more than once, Paul was in mid vocal and you saw him like just lose his balance because the boat was rocking so much.
I've been seasick before, so I know exactly. Oh, you know, not a good feeling.
I don't get seasick. What's weird is same thing happened to me this time, although it wasn't as bad as last time. I get land sick. I get sick after the fact, like, and not even, I wouldn't even say sick. Like I didn't like puke or anything like that, but. I mean, the couple of days after I got home from the cruise, I would just be sitting there and it would just feel like, you know, that feeling like when you get off a roller coaster or something,
yeah,
you know, how
yeah.
you're still kind of wobbly, you know, wibbly.
Equilibrium's still off a little
bit. Yeah, wibbly wobbly, you know, it's like, and I felt that way nonstop for like 24 hours, you know, for at least 2-3 days after that, then I was okay. But yeah, maybe.
So we're planning a big cruise for my 40th birthday this year. So maybe I can convince my family to wait until January. We can go on the next 70,000 tons.
Oh,
I think my grandma would love it,
dude. See, that's the other thing too. Is like, I mean, all right, you know, yeah, I'm metal. I like metal, all this kind of stuff. But I'm not like one of those metal people, you know,
right.
Like I'm not like one of these people that's just like comfortable walking around all the time in like, you know, a smelly old Raven shirt with a battered jean vest and, you know, my balls hanging out of my worn out Levi's kind of thing. Like some of these people,
right.
And that's, there's a lot of those people on that cruise, you know, not saying everybody's like that. So I don't want any hate mail, but people know there's a lot of those people on there. And it's like, those are usually the rowdiest and the rowdiest people and the people that make themselves most known. So it's like, yeah, I couldn't imagine like bringing family you know, on a cruise right. like that. I mean, there was actually a few kids. I saw, like, Alex and Liv from Liv's Eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, they brought family. They brought kids and stuff with them. And, I'm, you know, those kids are probably used to it because they probably bring them to festivals and other things and stuff. But, you know, I mean, there's stuff to do there for, like, kids and stuff like that. I mean, there's a casino there. Well, that's not for kids, but, you know, there's a casino there for the adults, you know. There's a couple of, like, arcades there. There's,
right.
of course, there's pools. There's a rock climbing wall. There's different, like, functions that they do. There's several restaurants. And, I mean, there is a lot to do, man. It's worth it.
There's a lot of eating on a cruise.
Yeah, unfortunately, because yeah. both Paul and I put some pounds back on during that cruise.
I saw that.
Yeah. But
I know he was able to get him off pretty quickly, though.
Yeah, yeah, he is like
he's a monster, man.
Super commando about it, man. He's just going crazy with it to the point where I'm like, take it easy, man. You know, I'm like, you know, don't, you know. He's getting pretty good. He's finding like now his groove with like
mm-hmm.
balancing out eating healthy and taking care of himself and still now and then, you know. Indulging a little bit on certain things, but
yeah,
it's crazy.
If you don't indulge, man, every once in a while, you're not going to stick to it.
No, and it's crazy. I mean, you've seen the pictures and stuff. I mean, wait till you see, you know, when I put up the video next week of the studio with him in it, you know, when you see him stand there moving around and I mean, there's people, I guess, here's real quick. Here's a funny thing. Paul went and saw Moonspell play
mm-hmm.
a few weeks ago. And, you know, they're good friends of ours for a long time now. And, you know, he walked backstage and Fernando pretty much recognized him. But like Mike and the other guys, like it took them a minute or two before they were like, wow, oh, man, you know, Paul, like they just didn't recognize him. And then that same night, an ex-member of November's Doom, who, you know, the guys haven't seen in several years, walked right past Paul like more than once, even said, excuse me to Paul. Obviously didn't realize it was Paul.
And he's like, what the fuck, man? Are you going to say hi to me?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that is really weird. I mean, like, I've lost weight, as you know, and everything, but it's not, I think, I'm still, you know, I'm still recognizable, you know, I'm just a little slimmer, you know, than I was. Where, I mean, Paul, wow. Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendous difference on him, and, weird.
Yeah, I when I meet people now, it's like we'll get into conversations about losing weight or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I've lost 100 something pounds. They're like, no, you? No way. Because people that didn't know me a couple years ago, you know,
right?
I have to pull out the old picture, and they're like, that's not you. I'm like, yeah, that was me.
Yeah, I went through that a little bit when I first because my weight loss was pretty quick because of the because of the initial nature of why I lost the weight,
right?
Because I got sick and everything. So there were people that hadn't seen me for a year or something like that. And there were some people that I walked in and they were just like, whoa, you know, what the heck? You know, cause I mean, Paul's lost something like 185 pounds or something mm-hmm. like that. I've lost total like 70, I think it is. So, you know, it's considerable difference, you know, there.
That's still amazing though, man.
Yeah, I mean, now I've just been working on trying to keep it off, you know.
That's the hard part, not putting it back on.
Right, when I talked to you last time, I had just been through the surgery and all that, and I was mm-hmm. down to like around 155 or something like that. And I've put a little bit back on, which everybody said was going to happen. And I'm like, I'm up at like around 165, 166. So I put 10-12 pounds back on, but I've managed, you know, since September, I mean, I've managed to really keep it around there. So I'm pretty happy. I'm still just trying to work on, I'm not even so much worried about pounds. Now what I'm worried about is putting on healthy mm-hmm. weight, muscle and stuff.
Exactly.
Cause I lost so much muscle, you know, before, because when I was sick, I couldn't exercise and do a lot of the things I wanted to do because I was in pain all the time. And then after the surgery, I mean, it was a couple of months before I was even allowed to carry my own amplifier, you know,
mm-hmm.
for, you know, I had to have other people carry my shit for me, you know, which was nice. I'm not going to lie, but, you know, so I'm still, rebounding from all that and trying to like get my ass back in shape. And, you know, I want to feel good and look good when I go out and do this touring this summer. You know, I want to be able to wear a t-shirt. I looked at some of the video of me from 70,000 tons and I just cringed, you know, cause I was like so flabby and out of shape. I mean, ugh, pisses me off. Everything I've been through, you know how it goes, you know, you go through shit, you want to feel good. And then you see yourself and you're like, damn it, I'm still not, you know, the way
I'm not where I want to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's good. I guess that's what drives us, you know?
Yep. So let's go back to the cruise a little bit, before we move on. Okay. You said you played two sets. So how do you decide what songs you're going to play? Do you try to do something special for one of the sets?
Yeah. Well, I mean, honest to God truth, I think it's pretty much public knowledge. Everybody knows that the promoters for that fest usually request bands, if it's at all possible, to play two different sets, you know, cause they want it to be different, you know, they want it to be special. And, I mean, that's not hard for us, man, because, you know, we've got 9 albums now. So picking songs it's usually hard trying to pick songs for just one 75-minute show, you know? What we did was, we crossed over. I mean, there's certain songs that we know we have to play in both sets. We have to play Rain in both sets, you know, things like that. The other thing that was kind of cool about it was we don't usually do this in the history of the band, but we actually, we played a new song. We played the title track, Blood White. I mean, we had literally just completed that, you know, a couple weeks before, but we were so jazzed about it. We said, fuck it, let's play it, you know, and I'm really glad we did, because all the reaction we got, not only from people there, but from people who saw the YouTube videos that got put up afterwards.
Yeah, I've seen the video.
A lot of people were going, oh man, you know, really digging that song. And I think it got a lot of people interested again, you know, in what we've got coming out. Cause you know, Photic's old now, you know, that album came out 3 years ago. So we got to work to get people interested again, you know? So
on the cruise, who was what were some of your favorite bands that you saw?
Let's see. Carcass, of course. Carcass were always, always amazing. They were great. Obituary was great. You know, just they sounded exactly like when I saw them 22 years ago, you know? Nice. Obituary was great. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm an old old guy. But as far as even like newer bands go, though, I mean, like Unearth was amazing. I thought they were just, you know, they're for that genre of metal, I think they're like one of the best. They're just so solid live, really entertaining. Unearth was great. Satyricon, oh my God, Satyricon,
oh, wow, yeah,
fucking so good. Yeah, way into them. I have been for a long time, and I know a lot of other people don't dig new Satyricon. I'm the opposite. I love new Satyricon, and live, they were one of the best bands on the cruise, and you know, performance wise for me. I saw a lot of really good bands. I mean, DRI was really cool to see. Death Angel was great. Raven.
Yeah, I could see Death Angel on Wednesday this week.
Oh, nice. Yeah, dude, there's what a fucking tight band. So tight. You know, they are just really good. You know, and I haven't seen Death Angel. I've missed all the reunion since they reunited, rather. I've missed all the reunion tours and stuff. So I don't think I've seen Death Angel since, like, Act 3 tour or something like
that. Oh, my God.
You know, yeah. So it's been a long time. So I was really pleased at how good they were. Gosh, I'm trying to think who else. I mean, there's so many. I missed Septic Flesh, unfortunately. The one time, because we were playing at the same fucking time as Septic Flesh, which sucks. And then the second time, I think I was too drunk. I think I was burned out by the because Septic Flesh went on like really late, you know, on like the last night of the cruise. And I at that point, that was my birthday. And I was just, yeah. Cause that's the other thing. I celebrated my birthday on the cruise.
You can't beat that, man.
Yeah. It was cool. It was fun. It was funny because I didn't even see most of my bandmates, those fucks. everybody was kind of doing their own thing, you know. We had dinner together and shit. That was cool. But I ended up spending most of my birthday. It was me and Gary, the drummer. And then I ended up spending it with, like, a bunch of new people that I met on the cruise. You know, I met, like, a couple guys from Seattle, a couple from Austria. You know, I met some people from Canada, you know, and all hanging out, like, talking about metal and wrestling and all sorts of stuff, you know, like, just, and in that respect, man, it was kind of cool. It was interesting hanging out with people from all over, you know, all over the civilized world, basically, you know, people I'd never met until that day or that week, and just everybody hanging out, you know, wishing me a happy birthday and having fun talking about old metal and stuff. It was cool, man. It was an interesting experience. So
yeah, I'm looking at the lineup right now, and it's such a wide, varied lineup of different styles of metal.
Yeah,
it's cool.
It is. And then, I mean, they do things like, well, that's mostly what I did on my, that night of my birthday, is I went, they, every night at midnight, they do karaoke.
Nice.
in one of the lounges. And I mean, everybody goes, like, it's not just like the fans and stuff in attendance. I mean, like, Burton from Fear Factory got up and sang quite a few songs, you know. Russell from Symphony X was getting up singing everything from gangster rap to to, like, Foreigner ballads, you know, like, wow. I mean, it's like something you don't see every day kind of thing. I got
to find video footage of that, man.
Oh, it's up there. Yeah, if you look, you know, look it up. I got up and I did In a Big Country by Big, the old 80s song. I got up and did that, and the Carcass guys were sitting there, like, singing along with me and cheering along and everything. And then Jeff from Carcass got up and did Take On Me by Aha.
Okay, I've got to see that one, man.
Yeah,
it's
pretty great. Yeah, I mean, so, it again, not to be like the walking commercial for 70,000 Tons, but, I mean, any of the listeners out there that have been sort of, like, on the fence about it or not sure if it's worth the money, man, if that's your thing, you know, if you're interested in going on a cruise and you're into metal and fests and just and meeting bands and meeting other fans from all over the world and eating and drinking and headbanging yourself into oblivion, I mean, I really can't recommend it enough, man.
And they've announced what next year is going to be a bigger ship with 60 bands playing.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Four stages, man.
Yeah, they retired the Majesty of the Seas, the one that we had been on. It's on a different ship now, and 60 bands. That's crazy. I mean, like, there's no way we'll play because they don't usually do repeat bands like that, which is cool. I think that's a good idea, but yeah, there's a part of me that kind of wishes I'd go, you know. I mean, it's not inconceivable I might just go, but it's, you know, it's so hard. I have to save what free time I have to do Doom stuff, you know, to do stuff with November's Doom, especially with the new album coming out. We got so many things on our plate. I mean, we're still going to try to get to the East Coast. We're still going to try and get to the West Coast and maybe down south, you know, and
In Texas?
Yeah, I hope so. Well, I mean, you and I know, you know, we were both, you put me in touch with a mutual friend. We'll see if anything comes of that. Maybe we can trade a couple of shows and finally get down there. I mean, I it's hard for us, like I said before. It's hard because of everybody's schedule. You know, we're not like Black Dahlia Murder. You know, we're not one of those bands that can go out and tour six, 7 months. You know, everybody's at the point where we're, most of us anyway, are older and have jobs and kids and other bullshit that prevents us from going out on those stretches. So we gotta be creative with how we make it work. But I'm really fucking determined that we'll get it this time. We'll get down there. So
cool, man. I'm looking forward to that. So besides the 70,000 Tons, have you seen any other shows recently?
Yeah, well, I went to one last night. It wasn't metal, but it was probably, I don't know if you saw my Facebook post about it.
I did, yeah.
Probably one of the, no, it wasn't probably, it was. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. I'm a big Genesis fan, and I know for a lot of you listeners out there, you're going to start laughing when I say that. Well, Genesis, for those that don't know, Genesis wasn't all about Phil Collins and Invisible Touch and all that shit. I mean, that's yeah. stuff's cool. That don't get me wrong, but Genesis was one of the, you know, most influential, like, progressive art, mm-hmm. art rock bands in the early 70s, and that's where, you know, Peter Gabriel came from and everything. And that material is what I really love. I love their early stuff, and they were very weird and dark and moody. And this group that I went and saw last night from, I think they're from Quebec, called The Musical Box. They're not just a tribute band. They do a complete reenactment of the 1973 Genesis tour. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. It was so complete. I've gone to see bands, or I've gone to see everything from bands who reunited, like Kiss or something like that, to like, you know, Queen tributes and AC/DC tributes. And I've seen some amazing tribute bands, and I've seen stuff that's good, but you always walk out going, oh yeah, but it's too bad they didn't do this song, or, oh, it's too bad that they didn't have a better drummer or whatever. No, dude, like, this was the most exact thing I've ever seen. That if somebody filmed it in a way that made it look antiquated and from far back enough, you
right.
almost could fool me into thinking it was Genesis from 1973.
Put some star wipes in it.
It was, yeah, exactly. It was, it was just, everything about it was perfect. And like I said, I'm a big fan of Peter Gabriel era Genesis. So I was blown away. Tickets were like $60. So it wasn't cheap,
oh, wow.
you know, wasn't cheap. Dude, it was worth every fucking penny. That was just one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. Anybody out there that might be listening to this, that likes old Genesis like that, the early stuff, likes Peter Gabriel, go see it. I vouch for it, man. Because if you walk out of there being disappointed, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because you couldn't get more exacting unless you got inside the TARDIS and went back to 1973 and saw it yourself. That's the only way it could be better. So, yeah.
I actually saw a Lacuna Coil tribute band last week. They were called Lacuna Coil.
I was going to make that joke when you first said that. I thought you were being half serious. I was just like, oh.
No, we took my niece is now 22, and the very first show that we ever took her to was Lacuna Coil when they opened up for Superjoint Ritual.
Okay.
It's like 10 years ago, man.
Yeah.
So when they were playing in town the other night, like, so she got a babysitter. We went and saw them, and they played like a 40-minute set, and they played like two songs that I recognized.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the Hottest Chicks in Rock tour. And it was like Sick Puppies and some other bands, I Set to Kill, who weren't horrible. The drummer had a really cool thing. He, you know, some bands sell like, you know, an autographed drum head.
Right.
He had drawn a Spider-Man on the drum head. It was very, very cool looking.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know, just, I think I'm over it a little bit. This
yeah.
just, I mean, I liked them when they first came out, but now they're so commercial and I don't know.
Yeah. I don't knock them for what, I mean, if they're doing what they want to do, they've had a fair amount of success with it.
Yeah.
More so, I think, on the other side of the pond than here, but,
mm-hmm.
I lost interest in them a long time ago. I mean, they're talented, but I just, it's not my thing. When was the last time we would have played with them? I mean, it was back in like 2003, 2004. And even by that point, they had changed mm-hmm. considerably from what I had first known them, you know, cause I think the first time, I think we actually played a show or two with them on like their first American tour back in like, I don't, when would that have been? 2000, something like that.
Yeah. 2001. Something
yeah.
Like
somewhere
that, yeah.
around there. And they were really good. And it was just, and then by the time I saw them when we played with them in New England a few years later, you know, most of what they were doing was like on backing tracks. And it was like watching them perform on like Solid Gold or something like that. You know, it was like, it wasn't, I was just going, okay, well, you know, it's a cool show or whatever, but I just,
yeah.
it just wasn't the same for me. And, some people dig it. So again, I'm not knocking anybody that digs that stuff. That's
right. My niece and my wife were having a great time, so I was happy just to see them having a good time. And to me, I don't know if it was the club that night, but the sound was way off. The bass was way too loud in the mix.
Okay.
You could barely hear guitars. It was just, I don't know. It was one of those clubs where they packed way too many people in. It was just nut to butt, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's always the way it goes nowadays, you know, clubs and the promoters trying to squeeze every
and
fucking
if you guys,
dollar.
Right. If you guys are from Houston, it was at the Scout Bar, which is in Clear Lake, which is it's a cool little club when it's not a huge band.
Right.
And this is the same club where Iced Earth is playing with Sabaton in a few months, and it's going to be so fucking crowded
there. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
great. I'm gonna have to get there, like, early, and just you know, hold down my spot and not move.
And start out the night with, like, grab a few bottled waters, man, you know. And
yeah.
Just try to be a trooper through it, because that's going to be a hot one.
yeah, definitely, man. We're seeing this week at the House of Blues here in Houston. It's I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm not a huge Children of Bodom fan.
Yeah,
but I mean, I liked them when they first came out. But Death Angel, I'm a huge Death Angel fan, and
right.
Then Tear. I've never seen Tear live.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've
so
seen them.
We're really looking forward to that show.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good show. I mean, Bodom, you know, they're you know, tight. Well, usually
yeah.
tight.
Oh, yeah,
usually
yeah, yeah.
tight. You know, tight band and great musicians. You know, I mean, I haven't, I can't even remember the last time I listened to a Bodom CD. I was like pretty into them back in like the 90s and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I interviewed them on their very first album. EP actually for Mainstream Resistance back in the day.
Uh-huh. I remember that. Yeah. It's, you know, I still have a great appreciation for that band, but I they're not a band that I go out and I buy their CDs or anything.
Yeah. It's the showmanship, I think, is what turns me off a little bit about them.
Oh, okay. That doesn't really bother me. You know, I like showmanship to a degree. I get it. I get what they're doing. I mean, I know that it's, you know, as long as it's done well, I'm fine with that. I have issues with some bands. I'd rather see them be a little over enthusiastic and hokey with their showmanship than see guys
being
that are
boring.
Yeah, be boring or see guys that are up there drunk and falling down and playing shit badly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah,
which is why I will never ever go see Peter Criss or Ace Frehley ever in any context ever again. So
really
fuck them, all these people. Speaking of current things, did you hear about the whole thing with the Kiss Hall of Fame thing and all that stuff?
I've heard a little bit. I'm not a huge Kiss fan, but I did see them live at the Rodeo like 2 or 3 years ago here.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time I'd ever seen it, with like really cheap tickets. I'm like, hey, let's go see Kiss, you know. It's
a lot of people don't like them now because they say, well, they're just like a fucking tribute band. Well, they're right. They pretty much are like a tribute band now, and I think they're all the better for it, because I grew up a huge fan. I grew, you know, Ace Frehley is one of the main reasons I play guitar, and
okay,
you know, I watched that guy just fumble his way through shows too many times over the years. You know, I spent a lot of money going to see that guy, and you know, people like Paul Stanley. You know, he's got his own problems now, unfortunately, with I think he's just getting a little beyond his expiration date, you know, but he still tries his ass off. He still works mm-hmm. his ass off. He's still one of the most, you know, amazing frontmen out there in rock. And he tries his ass off. You know, Gene is Gene, you know, he is yeah. what he is. But it's like, you know, yeah, I've just, when I was going to see them on their quote unquote farewell tour and back at, 14 years ago. And, you know, I paid like $150 for a fifth row ticket or something, which was a lot of money at the time. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, watching Ace Frehley,
money now.
Yeah. Well, watching Ace Frehley forget how to play the guitar solo to Calling Dr. Love, you know, something like
really?
That. I'm like, oh, fuck you, man. You know, like, come on. You know, people think it's amusing, you know, oh, yeah, but Ace is so cool. He's the cool drunk. Fuck that. I'd rather see Tommy Thayer in the Spaceman makeup playing everything mm-hmm. note for note perfect. And I know that's a super controversial thing to say to a lot of Kiss fans. Give a fuck. I don't care, because I mean, a lot of people were upset about the whole thing of Kiss making the announcement of, well, screw it. We're not going to do it. You know, we're not going to play at the Hall of Fame because of all the controversy about not having Peter and Ace up there, and Eddie Trunk got involved in all that. Go figure.
I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to say anything more about that.
let's gloss that over.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm fine with it, because, to be honest with you, I mean, what real metal hard rock fan gives a fuck about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame anyway? You know, I mean,
no, exactly right.
It's not like the people that are voting on it and are in control of it are like, you know, the guys that are writing for true metal magazines and websites and stuff like that. It's fucking Rolling Stone, you know, yeah. And stuff like that. Rolling Stone, who doesn't even put, you know, true guitar geniuses, you know, in their greatest guitar player of all time, you know, polls, because, you know, they have to make room for Patti Smith's guitar player and shit like that. It's like, you know, who I respect, you know, and everything, but they've never, Rolling Stone has never given a shit.
So okay. I guess enough talk about unimportant stuff like the music industry. Let's talk about important stuff.
Absolutely. Sci-fi, superheroes, and all that good shit.
Exactly, man. The first thing I wanted to talk to you about, are you a subscriber to Netflix?
Yes, I am. Yep.
So there's a couple really cool pieces of news. First of all, the show that they've announced for Netflix that Marvel is doing, you know, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, which is all going to lead up to a huge Defenders series on the channel, has been announced that it's actually filming in New York City.
Hmm.
There's a big hoopla, big event they set up. So, you know, it's cool that these shows that are actually based in New York City are going to film there.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I haven't really, I'll be honest with you, other than when they made the initial announcement about stuff,
mm-hmm.
I haven't really been too clued in on what exactly they're planning. I mean, like, I'm sure you don't have time to fill me in now on everything, but like,
no,
what's the four titles again? Now that it's Daredevil.
So what they're doing is these are all going to come out in 2015. So
right.
They're bringing four different series. They're going to be 52 1-hour episodes.
Right.
It's going to culminate in a 4-8 episode miniseries programming event. So you're going to have Daredevil. There's going to be Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones. That's right.
Then okay. There's going to be an Iron Fist and then a Luke Cage, which is all going to culminate in this Defenders-like series.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because that's the thing. It's Defenders-like.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, close enough. I mean, Jessica Jones, if you've never read the Alias the Alias series by Bendis, amazing series.
I haven't, like, legitimately read it. I've read things okay. about it, you know what I mean? I know a bit about it, but not, I haven't actually sat down and properly read it. So.
It's definitely an adult-orientated series, which is going to be great, because Netflix is, they could do stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how far they can go. I don't know if it's an HBO or anything, but
right. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm not. I don't really want them to go too blue. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
anyway,
they really can't. I mean, you know, they're gonna know kids are gonna be watching these shows.
Yeah, even in kids, quote unquote. You know, at least
or
teens.
Kids.
You know, yeah. I mean, at least teens and stuff. I generally like most of my comic books to be still somewhat on the soft R, you know what I mean? If not,
sure.
not PG, you know, that's kind of what I like about Marvel stuff. I'm good with, the way it's been up to this point. I don't mind it getting a little more gritty, you know, that's for sure. You know, getting a little bit more adult themed in some of the situations and everything, but
yeah, definitely. Yeah. If you get a chance, pick up like the first graphic novel for Alias. It's not based on the old TV series, of course.
No, right. I knew
but,
that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a well written female strong character, really.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'll definitely check it out.
And it was a character created for that series, and, you know, she did so well. Of course, Bendis actually brought her into the Avengers as a series regular for a while.
Right.
So, that's cool, though. I'm looking forward to that, man. And I'm thinking, I mean, Defenders, you can't do Defenders without some kind of version of Doctor Strange.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at, is like, you know, I mean, granted, I understand there's, you know, there were plenty of Defenders lineups and stuff over the years too, but just like with the Avengers, but at this point it's like, who hasn't been a fucking Avenger? But you know, but yeah, for me,
I haven't,
you know. Yeah, but well, yeah, but for me, yeah, I would definitely, at the very least, I would like to see some sort of connection with Doctor Strange if it's going to be labeled as such, you know, as being a Defenders thing. I'd really like, Doctor Strange has so much potential, you know, and the only thing they've ever done with him was that crappy 70s movie, you know, which
they did, right, and they did a live or a cartoon
right movie, okay, you know, that's true, 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking more in terms of just like actual movies, live action movies. I mean,
and they've announced, you know, Doctor Strange is on the slate for, I guess, their third tier of movies. So this would be a perfect way to introduce the character to people on a lower budget.
Agreed. Yeah.
I mean, it's a win-win to me.
Yeah.
I mean, do you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at all?
I've seen a couple episodes of it. I here's the thing with me. I like to watch things retroactively, you know, like retrospectively, whatever. I like to go back and watch something. I'm too impatient to sit there and wait week to week.
Wait week to week, yeah.
I do that now and then, you know, certain things I'll do that with. But generally, especially if something's already started, I don't like to jump into the middle of things. And I was, because Agents started when I was in the hospital and all that stuff and healing, like, I just, you know, I missed a few episodes of it. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going
to
wait.
So, I mean, yeah, if you want to, I guess, wait till, I guess, the full season comes out, that might be the best idea. You know, I'm on the place of that show where I don't hate it, but it's not my favorite show.
Right.
And it's starting to get a little bit better right now. They're starting to reveal some information that they should have revealed a long time ago. So hopefully it'll get better.
That's what I heard about it. I heard that people have warmed up to it a lot more now.
Yeah, and they're really bridging the gap between the movies and the TV show a little bit more, which is what people really were expecting, and they didn't do it at first.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, it was a tricky proposition to begin with. So, I mean, I can understand and respect that it took them a little while to get up to speed. So.
And I think everybody, when they heard about it, oh, we're going to have a Marvel TV show, they kept on expecting, okay, we're going to have Thor show up and Iron Man will be on this episode. And it wasn't designed like that.
No,
you know?
I knew it wasn't going to be like that, you know.
I'm glad it's not like that, truthfully.
Right. Yeah, because I think it'd be overkill.
It's the story of, you know, other characters in the universe. Just like they've done in comic books every once in a while. Even Spider-Man's done this a lot. They'll devote a whole issue to like a subsidiary character.
Yeah, and then sometimes those are my favorite stories. I mean, it's, you know, even, not to get off subject, but I mean, even like in some of like the Doctor Who, like, stories and everything, some of my favorite ones are the ones that focus more on the companions or even on like other supporting characters and aren't just so Doctor-centric. You know, sometimes I think those are the best stories, and it just fleshes out the whole universe better, you know.
So now that you did bring up Doctor Who, let's talk about it.
Oh, I got no problem with that.
Doctor Who, discuss.
yeah, my favorite.
My wife is a huge fan, and I've only watched, truthfully, the last couple of Matt Smith seasons.
Okay.
So, and I've watched maybe like the first or one or two episodes from Eccleston.
Oh,
and
okay.
I promised her that I'm going to get into it. It's just finding the time to devote to watching it. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I do not dislike it at all. It just hasn't pulled me in like other shows have. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a quirky show, man, and you've gotta you got to be open to it. And I mean,
no, I have no problem with that.
You know, a lot of it is goofy and implausible, you know, but that's part of its charm. That's what's so awesome about it. I mean, I grew up a Who fan, you know, I was my doctor, you know, everybody has their doctor. My doctor.
Yeah, I was about to ask you who your doctor
was.
Yeah,
my doctor was a typical one, you know, given my age and everything. My doctor was Tom Baker, you know, the fourth doctor. And it was very different back then. And at first, when I first tried watching and delving into the reboot in 2005, right. It was a little, I was like, ah, this seems like I'm not going to like it. You know, it's not, I liked how goofy and low budget, you know, the old series was and everything. And I honestly, I've warmed up to them since, but it took me a long time to really even accept, like, you know, Peter Davison when he came along. And then I actually liked Colin Baker. I thought Colin Baker was pretty good. He was kind of goofy, but, you know, I was so stuck on Tom Baker, and then to a lesser extent, I was into Pertwee as well. So, once I finally, actually the episode that lured me in was I watched when it was on Sci-Fi, I think I watched, Tennant's last episode, The End of Time. And I had no idea what the hell was going on because I hadn't been watching it, you know, for the prior couple of years.
Right.
I had no idea, but I was watching it and I was just like, and the way that episode ended, I know a lot of Whovians are, split on it, how they feel about it. But for me, the way that episode ended and the way the regeneration came about and I
have seen that. Yes.
Yeah. I got sucked in. I was like, this is fucking great. I'm like, this is just so good. Like I had no idea it was like this, you know? So then I started delving in a little more. And then the episode that really, and I think a lot of people feel this way, that really just got me firmly invested was Blink, was the Blink episode with the Weeping Angels.
Right. And,
and there's a good example of, there's a good example of a Who episode that isn't really Doctor centric. It focuses on these other characters more. And winds up being one of the best stories of the entire series, you know?
I do. Yeah. They're able to take a sci-fi show and sort of twist it around a little bit. Sometimes it's a horror show and it's, you know, a character study and
it's a rom-com or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I really do like that.
Yeah. And that's what I like about it too. You know, and then they have, you know, in recent years, they've done stuff like have people like Neil Gaiman, like write for them and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like he did.
You can never go wrong with Gaiman.
No. And his episode, called The Doctor's Wife, that I won't talk too much about cause I don't want to give away spoilers, but,
see, you were definitely a Doctor Who nerd because you know the episode titles.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Easily. but it's like, that's one of the best ones too. And it's cool that they, you know, the things that I was initially hesitant about with the new Who, now are the things that I adore about it. So, you know, I know a lot of people, older fans especially, are like a little leery of all the kissing and romance that seems to go on now in the Who stories and with the Doctor, and I love it. I like
modern storytelling.
Anyway. Yeah, and I like romance anyway. I'm one of those guys. You know, I like when it's done well. You know, and you know, one of my favorite characters on that show is River Song. I love River Song. Again, another one that people are very divided on. I think she's probably my favorite character. Because I mean, boy, talk about timey-wimey. That her whole story is just so involved, you know. And it's funny because I've only recently gotten my wife into the show. And I told her, I'm like, I think you'll like this. Give it a chance. Because she's not a big sci-fi person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's very picky about it. And she's firmly invested now in everything Who. She just loves it. And
I think you've hit the nail right on the head, man. It's not the reason why it's so popular again, especially, it's weird, it's like popular with like young girls and stuff, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. they've had the right casting, they've had the right writing, and it's not over the top science fiction-y where they go, oh, I don't get this, and well, and they, like you said, they throw in the romantic comedy and all that kind of stuff.
And they do it in a way where it is as out there and implausible and hard to wrap your head around stuff is as crazy as the show is. At the yeah. same time, it creates characters that people relate to. You know, a lot of people, a lot of girls out there are like, I could be Amy, you know, I could be Rose. I could be, you know, or, oh, I want to meet somebody like Rory, you know, like Rory reminds me of a boy I know or a guy I know, mm-hmm. or, you know, like, there's so much stuff that's in there now, whereas you didn't really get that feeling when you watched, you know, the you know, the old Doctor from the 70s or even the 80s and everything. You just didn't get it. It was definitely out there and you felt a little more detached. You know, sometimes you could relate to the companions back then, but they definitely weren't as earthy, and they really started that with Eccleston and with Rose and everything. Yeah.
Speaking of Rory, if you're listening to this, both ours, where is our autograph? Mm-hmm.
What?
No, William Bothard got us an autograph from, what's the actor name who plays Rory?
Oh, Arthur Darville, really?
Arthur Darville, yeah. And supposed to send it to my wife, but that was like 6 months ago, brother. Where is it?
Bothard!
But okay, so let me ask you this. Out of the newer, the rebooted series, who is your favorite Doctor?
Oh, man. See, okay, so, yeah, this week...
My wife just said the same thing. She's like,
Yeah, I have the same debate with my wife because, ironically, the least obvious one to me, I thought it would be one of the others, but her favorite Doctor is Eccleston. That's her Doctor. You know, and...
Destro?
Yeah, Destro, exactly. Yeah, the man who didn't want to stick with Doctor Who because he didn't want to get typecast into that kind of silly role, but then he went and played Destro.
And, yeah, didn't want to be typecasted at all. Now he's, like, playing villains all the time.
Right, exactly. No, and I love it. I thought he was a great Doctor. Loved him. But he's not my Doctor. I love Matt Smith. I'm really sorry to see him go.
Yeah, I like him a lot, man.
Yeah,
he's a really good. He brought that, I guess, a childish quality.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of, you know, all the newer Doctors kind of remind me a little bit of older Doctors in some way, and he reminds me a bit of Troughton of the second Doctor, and I from what I've heard, I think he kind of half modeled it that way, but I'm not sure if that's true or just, you know, gossip. But if he did do it, he did a good job, because he kind of reminds me, he does, because Troughton had that same kind of whimsical sort of, like, you know, spacey side to him and everything.
Sure.
But I guess if I really have to be honest with myself, my Doctor is Tennant.
Okay. I hear that a lot. Everybody loves Tennant.
I don't know. Tennant, a lot of the things that he would say and do, it's like, yeah, that's what I would say. That's what I would, you know.
Yeah, I watched one of the last episodes where all the Doctors were together.
Yeah.
Trying to save their home planet.
Yeah.
I liked him in that. That was a cool episode, and I really liked Hurt in that show.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. Like, see, like, Jess hasn't made it that far yet. She's only seen. We're together. We're watching season 7, part 2. So I know what happens. I know everything. But she hasn't gotten to Day of the Doctor in Time of the Doctor.
I'm sort of skipping it around. You know.
Yeah, that's hard.
Both current stuff. Yeah.
See, you're being all timey wimey, wibbly wobbly about it yourself, and that's.
I was just thinking that myself, man.
That's that's definitely the tough way to do it. No, what I did with her was, I got her, I was like, you got to watch this show. I'm telling you, she was super fucking skeptical. And I sat her down and I said, watch Blink. At least watch Blink with me. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like Blink, then you're not going to like the show probably, you know? And she said, okay. She watched Blink and she was like,
oh, that was really good. And I'm like, yeah, I knew she would like Blink. Like, I knew it had that kind of tone to it that she was going to take.
Yeah.
And so then I'm like, okay, can we now go back and start watching it, you know, with, from the start with Eccleston? And she did. And, yeah, she latched on with that first season, the 2005 season with the Ninth Doctor. So she loves Matt Smith, she loves Tennant, but Eccleston's her doctor, whereas I feel like, to me, it's got to be the 10th Doctor. I because I loved Rose. Rose is still my favorite companion. It introduced River Song, and she's like my favorite character. I mean, my how lame and nerdy is this? My my desktop on a photo on my laptop is a picture of River Song and Matt Smith like kissing, and it says "Hello, sweetie." So that's, you know.
Oh, that's so unmetal, man.
I don't give a fuck.
I know exactly.
I don't give a shit. People haven't learned that the most metal thing to be is to not give a fuck about whether you're metal or not.
It's to be yourself, man.
Yeah, exactly. I don't give a shit. No, like I said, I like a good romance, and especially when it's. I mean, come on, it's a romance. It involves aliens and guns and regenerations and monsters and all this stuff. What, you know?
It's like, what do you think Star Wars was?
Yeah, Star Wars was like, man, that's crazy shit, because now you're talking about, like, brother and sister romance and stuff. That's a whole other, that's like the kind of metal romance you find in a grindcore song. I don't know, man.
Man on Wookiee romance.
Yeah. No better love story than a man and his Wookiee.
That's true. And they sure do say cockpit a lot. So, yeah, definitely. It's all on Netflix, so I just need to really watch it. Speaking of Star Wars and Netflix, this is a great segue. They just released the whole series of Star Wars Clone Wars on Netflix.
Yeah. How do you feel about Clone Wars?
I like it. It's I haven't watched every episode, every season. It was a little bit here and there for me, but I'm going to try to power through it on Netflix now. I just watched the first episode the other night, and they actually, the last season that never actually was on TV is on Netflix. So
yeah, I heard about that.
Instead of just jumping to it, I want to try to get through the seasons, but it's going to be hard. There's some good stuff and there's some bad stuff on that show.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I've watched it intermittently, you know, and which is probably not the best way to do it. People have told me, you know, just like I was saying about Who, people have said, oh, try to watch the whole thing. You know, now that it's on there, I'm probably going to go back at some point, you know, maybe this summer and sit down and really watch it. Plus they've got the new show that's supposed to be coming out, right? Rebels or whatever.
Rebels. Yeah.
You know, so I intend on checking that out. So I figure I'll go back and I'll watch this. Yeah. You know, Star Wars, man, I'm such an opinionated nerd when it comes to like Star Wars stuff. And, you know, it's tough. Introducing new things into the Star Wars universe for me is tough because I'm one of those crotchety old, you know, Star Wars fans that, I mean, I still fight with people over the goddamn prequels, you know, I mean, and that's been done for how many years now? And
Do you hate them?
I don't hate them. I think that they were just a sadly, you know, big ball of missed opportunity, man. I mean, there was,
it was a necessary evil.
Elements of it that were just great. I know some people don't agree with me on this. I thought, I'm a big Ewan McGregor fan and I think he's great. And I thought he was wonderful as Obi-Wan Kenobi. I mean, there was a few lines and things here and there that had nothing to do with him. It had to do with the writing.
The writing, yeah.
yeah. But I thought he was a great Obi-Wan. I thought
he did a perfect impersonation of a younger Alec Guinness.
Exactly. And I was super stoked. I liked Qui-Gon Jinn. I liked Darth Maul. I saw so much potential in what could have been.
And then they fuck it up with Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, and I mean, even Jar Jar Binks, he sucked. You know, I know there's no way around that. But I didn't like Jake Lloyd. I didn't like the way... No. I did not like the backstory they came up with for Anakin. I didn't like the way they wrote him. I didn't... Or directed him. And then they got fucking what's-his-nuts
unable-to-act guy.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think he's a horrible actor. And again, I don't know if it's his fault or if it's George's fault or whose fault, but I just feel like...
And that's something to look forward to now that George is not involved at all anymore. So I think a lot of the problems with the prequels was his vision. Oh, it has to be this way. And it
potentially, Yeah. Right. Yeah. I agree.
Hearsay.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. If you were telling me that we were doing 7, 8, 9 and it was with the same crew that had done the prequels, I'd be like, oh, forget it. Yeah. You know, I have no,
I mean, Kathleen Kennedy is on board and she's never really steered anybody wrong. But here's my problem is, Disney has announced that they're going to be doing a movie every year.
Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of them are going to be, they're going to be, you know, it's going to be a regular series movie, and then there'll be like a Boba Fett movie or
right.
like a character piece, which could be cool, but oversaturation is going to kill the series.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I agree with you, but at the same time, you know what, dude, Star Wars is completely oversaturated already.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, you know, it's why like in every aspect of the phenomenon that is Star Wars. I mean, it's even like with toys and stuff, because, you know, I'm a big toy collector and Star Wars was always, you know, one of my biggest focuses, you know, is collecting Star Wars toys. And I'm at the point where I just don't care anymore because there's so mm-hmm. much of it and so much rehash and so much offshoots and this and that. And that, even that's why I said, like with the Clone Wars, I was just kind of like, I tried to get invested in it and I really had a hard time. So
I recently just sold my collection of Star Wars carded action figures from the 90s, like the Power of the Force series and all that kind of stuff.
You probably didn't get much for it, did you?
I got enough to buy a PlayStation 4.
Well, then you got something out of it then.
That's something that I use almost every day, which I figured was a better deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I've got all that stuff. I've got vintage stuff.
I got lots of vintage, but none of it. I only have one vintage in the package, and that's a Boba Fett from Empire.
Really? You've got a carded Empire Boba?
Yeah.
Man, that's a nice piece, dude.
I have it. I got it when I was like at a convention when I was like really young, maybe like 11, 12-ish, you know?
Oh, no shit.
I've had it for a while. I paid a lot for it back then too. It was like one of my very big purchases as a kid, you know?
Out of curiosity, tell me, how much did you pay?
It was like 50 or 60 bucks back then.
Yeah, well, yeah. You've maximized that investment, man, because that thing's, I don't know the condition and stuff, you know, if it was graded or which I won't even get into grading, that's a whole other bag of dicks to deal with. But, but I mean, if it got like a good grade, I mean, shit, you could sell that for easily 10 times what you paid, if not way more than that. So that's a nice piece, man. Congrats.
And I have boxes of original, you know, figure that I've had since I was a kid.
Yeah, played with ones. Yeah.
I don't have any of the guns or any of the weapons or any of that kind of stuff anymore. Right. It's all gone, but
yeah, I've got like those. None of them are like mint and sealed box, but I've got like mint in box, like X-Wing and TIE Fighter. I've got the Death Star playset. I've got the Imperial Attack Base. I treated myself to the Imperial Attack Base when I got out of the hospital back in September.
Nice.
I just pulled out in my garage.
I still have my, it's not fully complete, but I have most of the pieces, the Ewok Village.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Oh my God. I've had this since I was a kid.
Yeah. I never had the Ewok Village. By the time Jedi came out, the Jedi toys were coming out. I was at like that tail end where like I started. Sure. I was.
I'm better than this. I'm too old for this shit.
No, I mean, I still dug it. You know, I always liked it. I've always liked toys. I've always liked comics, all that kind of stuff. But I got to the point where it was like, you know, if I had 20 bucks in hand, it was either, you know, am I going to go buy this speeder bike toy or am I going to go and buy, you know, this this Anthrax album or something. You know what I mean? Like it was, or, you know, I started going to the record store and putting all my money into like, you know, band shirts and import records from the metal section and everything, you know, and I just, it just gradually phased over to that and started buying. And plus, see, Jedi came out in 83. So yeah, I was 10 years old, man. And I was, you know, I was already taking guitar lessons and, you know, and then it started being about buying guitar strings and gear and shit like that. And
yep, exactly. You're only a year or so older than me. So
right.
I was right behind you, man.
Right.
So I got, actually, when I was a kid, I remember I regret this so much. And my mom's like, hey, do you want to donate any of your toys? I was like, well, I don't need that stuff anymore, you know? So I got rid of all my G.I. Joes and all those Transformers I had as a kid.
Yeah.
And,
That's some dough. I still regret that.
I know, right?
Yeah. I mean, I actually was smart enough that there's a sad end to the story. I was smart enough to hang on to all that stuff through my teens. I knew I wanted it, and I had a couple of like big, like almost like maybe not refrigerator size, but at least like dishwasher size boxes, you know, that I kept like Star Wars, Joes, Micronauts, you know, old Mego figures, all that stuff.
Oh,
I kept
Micronauts. Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah, I love Micronauts. But I will one day put out my technical metal Micronauts concept album. I'm gonna do it.
Oh, let's yeah. I'll be there with you.
based on the Marvel comic.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. I still have a couple of those action figures too.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
So I guess back in the day, you talking about Mego, there were the Star Wars sort of versions of those, but they weren't Mego, were they?
Well,
they were like sort of plastic, they had cloths. I have a complete Obi-Wan.
No, those aren't Mego. Those were made by Kenner. They're 12 inches tall. They were, yeah, right. But they only came out with, them between 79 and 80. There's only two figures that actually got released in Empire Strikes Back packaging, IG-88 and Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. And Boba Fett was available in both, actually.
I have a Boba Fett, but it's missing, an arm, part of his arm.
Yeah, those arms always were kind of chintzy, that brittle plastic, they fell apart.
But I have a really good quality, really good condition of the Obi-Wan, and it probably could use a washing, you know, like the cloth.
Yeah, that's cool. No, I don't have any of the 12-inch figures. I ended up selling all of them back when I owned my comic shop in the 90s, and I needed money, you know. Mm-hmm. I sold off a lot of stuff then that I regret. But the stuff that I had kept from my childhood in those boxes, one time, you know, when I was a teenager, I was off going to parties and playing gigs and being metal and all that shit, and just forgot about those boxes being down in my basement in storage. And my dad went through and did like a crazy spring cleaning, just like, I want to get everything out of this fucking house, blah, blah, blah. One of those deals. And, yep. Threw away everything, and I didn't know. And by the time I found out, like I realized a few weeks later, I went down there and I noticed everything had been, you know, cleaned out. And then I'm like, wait a minute, where's my boxes of shit, you know? And I went and asked my mom about it, and she said, oh, your dad threw all that out. He didn't think you cared. And, oh, dude, I mean, not only did I have toys in those boxes, I had all my tour books that I collected from concerts I'd gone to over the years. I had, like, Kiss and Alice Cooper and Metallica and, God, I don't even remember. Every concert I'd gone to, I was a big tour book collector. And
yeah.
I had all.
I wish I did that still, but
they do now and then. You still see it every now and then, but you know, most bands nowadays just don't bother investing in it. They figure, well, who's going to buy this? They're just going to look up all these same pictures and articles online, you know.
Right. But, yeah, my heart broke when I heard that, man.
Yeah. So that sucks.
So you mentioned you had a store.
Oh yeah, I didn't tell you that before. Yeah,
I've never heard that.
Yeah, I used to own a collectible store from mid-90s through the early 2000s. I still owned it when I first joined November's Doom.
Really?
Yeah. I had it for, oh gosh, what was it, between 4 and 5 years.
Where was it at?
Here in Chicago, on the southeast side. you know, not far from where I live. It was just, you know, just typical little neighborhood shop. And what was cool, though, was, I mean, now a lot of comic stores have done this and it's nothing new. But at the time, back in like 95, when I first started, not a lot of comic book stores had a big variety of things like that. You know, you'd go into a comic shop and you might see, you know, they'd have some cards, you know, some, you know, Marvel Universe cards, and some, maybe they might have some Magic cards or whatever. And there might be the straggler toy here and there, but they didn't really overlap. And I was like one of the first stores, at least in my area, that really put like a heavy focus on, hey, let's carry like new and vintage toys. Hey, let's carry like a wide array of like cards and, you know, vintage items and stuff. You know, you could walk into my store and you never knew what you were going to find, you know, because I would, but this was back before everybody knew what they had, you know. Now everybody knows what they have, so good luck with this.
Yeah, exactly.
But back then I could go to garage sales, or I could go to flea markets or local toy shows, and I could buy a box of a bunch of Joes, you know, and their weapons and file cards. And, you know, I would only pay a reasonable sum for this whole thing. And then I could split them up and display them in my store and sell them for a couple bucks more a piece, you know. And I was good. Actually, I kind of sucked for myself because I was too honest. I had a lot of opportunities to probably make more money, but I just, because I was a collector, I couldn't rip people off like so many other dealers do. You know, I couldn't, you know, there was times when I had things I could have sold for way more money than I did, but mm-hmm. I got a huge thrill out of seeing people walk in my store and find, you know, that, you know, find a complete, you know, mail away Cobra Commander with the original Snake logo on his chest and mail, you know, file card, and be able to buy it from me for, you know, considerably less than if they got it, you know, on eBay or at a big, you know, Joe Con or something, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a good time, man. That's what I did for a living. I actually had quit playing music for a while. It's a long story I won't bore everybody with, but I quit playing, for personal reasons, different things that happened. I gave up on playing music for a while there in the mid-90s, which anybody that was around back then knows that mid-90s was kind of a rough time to be in a metal band in the United States anyway.
Yep.
You know, I mean, there's still a lot of great bands, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, a lot of great bands, a lot of great fans, but it was tough. It was tough getting ahead. And that wasn't the reason I gave up. But, I mean, there was personal things that happened. And I said, screw it, I want to do something else. And I had an opportunity to start this store, and I did. And it was fun while it lasted, but what a rough time to be involved in comic selling and everything, man, at the end of the 90s, because...
Right, when the bubble burst in.
Oh, God, did the bubble burst. I mean, there was all that, you know, all the fallout from, you know, that was when they started with the Heroes Reborn and Heroes Return and the fucking Clone Saga and Image mm-hmm. and Image and Valiant and all their 50 bazillion different alternate covers. And
yeah, that's what killed it, is they were getting greedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, we're going to have 15 different foil versions of this cover, and you got to buy them all because they're all going to be worth money.
Right.
No, they were never worth money. People weren't buying them to enjoy and to read anymore. They're buying them, they're hoping they were going to be worth something.
Speculators. Yeah. The 90s was all about speculators. And I, hey man, I admit it. I did it too, to some degree. I was mm-hmm. speculating.
I did too.
You know, I bought shitloads of anything that had McFarlane's name on it, thinking, you know, this is it. And now it all sits in my back room in my house, you know, because nobody wants it, because everybody has it.
Yeah. You know,
everybody bought it when I should have been continuing to focus more heavily on buying up the vintage stuff, you know, that now is even more scarce. And I learned some hard lessons from that. But man, people don't realize too, there's not a lot of money to be made in owning a collectible shop, man. The profit margin on things that you sell there, you know, especially the stuff that you order, because all comic retailers, well, we all order through Diamond.
There's really only one place.
Yeah, they have the monopoly, really. Yeah. I mean, call it what it fucking is. It's a monopoly on it. And the profit margin on stuff is so small. I mean, you're practically... I mean, even, you know, people sit there and go, oh, these fucking comic book stores, you know, I got to go in there. I'm spending $3.99 on average for a book. And I'm telling you right now, the amount of that $3.99 that's actually going into the comic book store's pockets is so small. It's fucking ridiculous. The goddamn distributors, just, you know, Diamond, they're the ones that are fucking reaping all the benefits from it. You know,
It's just like video games, man. You know, you go to a store, a game is $59.99, right?
Right.
A store will maybe possibly make $3 or $4 profit off of that $60 game.
Yeah, absolutely. People don't realize that. Everybody bitches at the retailers. You know, I've worked retail in various ways, you know,
stuff,
you know, working for somebody else and owning my own shop. So I've seen it from both sides. And that's, you know, that's why I'm not one of those people that walks into a store and starts bitching. Because I've had it happen, you know, start bitching at the people behind the counter that help me. This is ridiculous pain. Hey, man, the store,
you're bitching to the wrong guy, man.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're not the ones to blame. It's the fat cats sitting in their offices somewhere that are really making money off of it. You know?
Especially with video game stores, like, I won't mention any places that I've worked at, and I'm not gonna go there. Stop me if you've heard that before about video games. Stop me. You know, it's like people come. Okay, I just bought this game for $60. Now you're gonna give me $20 to buy it from me, and you're gonna go back and sell it for $55. Well, that's how they make their money.
Yeah,
it really is. I mean, the used video game business is what's only thing that keeps it afloat.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, man, dude. Oh, don't even get me started on that whole thing.
A whole another episode.
I can't even tell you how many times I still talk about this. I still bear the emotional scars from this, from dealing with this every fucking day. I used to, one, of course, being into music and everything. One of the things that I also did in my shop was I sold used CDs, because I would have people come in all the time asking, like, hey, do you buy CDs? And, again, this was mid-90s, so that was when the used CD thing really first started, you know, being a thing, you know. And I said, yeah, sure, you know, I'll buy CDs. And I sold them, you know, pretty cheap. You know, I think on average I sold like a CD, I'd sell it for like $5.98 or something like that, you know. Uh-huh. Like,
that's pretty cheap.
Yeah, you know, and even then it wasn't too bad, you know, it was a pretty good price. And so what I would usually do is I would give somebody about half. I'd pay them maybe like, you know, $3. Sometimes if it was a really good CD, like if it was something new, I'd give them more. I'd give them $4 or $5, you know, like, you know, if I knew there was going to be a quick turnaround, I'd give them more money, you know, but I'd at least give somebody half, you know. I'm going to sell it for $6. So I'll give you $3 or I'll give you $4. That's reasonable. You know, man, I would get every fucking day, I would get people that would come in and go, you know, hey, you know, sell me the, I'm going to sell you these CDs. You know, what do you give me? And I tell them, oh, you know, $3 for this, $4 for this. Oh man, you're ripping me off. And I'm going, how am I ripping you off? Well, you're selling these for like $6. And I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, give me $6 for it. I'm like, you're not very smart, are you? You don't understand economics and math, you know, very well. I'm like, if I give you $6, and I sell it for $6, then how much money am I making? And they go, well, you're making $6. I'm like, no.
Do you see these lights that are on? Do you see the rent that we have?
Well, I'm like, no, if I give you $6 and then I sell it for $6, I've made zero profit. And like, I can't tell you how many people couldn't wrap their head around that. I see it all the time. Do you ever watch any of those shows like Toy Hunter or American Pickers?
Oh yeah.
Or Pawn Stars. I see it all the time, man. It's like nails on a chalkboard because of what I used to go through.
How come you're not going to give me?
How much? So a guy would come in and appraise it. Well, I'd say that this would sell for $2,000, and then he'd say, okay, well, what do you want to sell it to me for? Well, I want $2,000 for it. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, really? It's like, then you know what? You want the full price for it? You go open a store.
Exactly.
And you pay the overhead and everything and the advertising, and you sell it to a collector. You know, it's like, Anyway, yeah, I'm sorry going off on that tangent, but man.
So, I wanted to ask you, what was the name of your store?
Hall of Heroes.
That's a cool name.
Yeah, and I know I've seen, you know, in travels and stuff, I've actually come across other Hall of Heroes over the years and stuff. I know it's not the most original name, but at the time, you know, it's, at least in the Midwest, there was no other Hall of Heroes around. So, yeah, I thought it was cool because I sold, you know, it was tricky picking a name. It's like trying to find a name for a band, you know. It's hard finding something that isn't used and something that's relevant. You know, to me, Hall of Heroes, I got it from an old comic series, an old comic series. But, you know, I sold all different kinds of heroes. I sold sports cards. I sold sci-fi stuff. I sold, you know, superhero stuff. It was all different kinds of heroes. So I said, okay, there you go. You know, but yeah, I loved that store. I mean, I ripped out a lot of hair owning that store, but I mean, you know, every day I got to talk to collectors and fans and shoot the shit about Marvel and DC and Star Wars and all this other stuff. And I mean, it was a good time, you know, but then demographics, things changed, man. You know, comics just went down the tubes. Video games became more of the thing, and there was no way, there was no way I was going to compete with the GameStops and all those that were in the neighborhood. So
yeah, you can't,
you know, I knew that I couldn't even get into video games, and, things like Pokemon and Digimon and all that stuff came into play, and I dealt with that a little bit, but you know, it really wasn't my thing, and that was hard to be competitive with as well. And then more than anything, what really changed everything was the internet, because by the time I closed in 2001, you know, that was when eBay now was in full swing, and you just couldn't compete. I mean, I'd be selling something in my store and somebody would say, well, I just paid $3 less for it on eBay, and I'm
right. Oh, you have to pay for shipping and
yeah, well, costs. You know, but people don't think about that. People don't care. I would bring that up all the time. There's, you know, I would order, like, say a new wave of Power of the Force figures would come out and I'd get them through Diamond or whatever. And I'd have to sell them in my store for like, you know, $8 a piece. Whereas at the time in Toys R Us, they were like $6 a piece, you know, and people would come in, mothers and stuff all the time, especially. Well, I could get this for $2 cheaper at Toys R Us. And I'm going, well, go ahead and drive a half an hour to Toys R Us just to get that $2 cheaper. Whereas you got to hear, you know, from me, you know, you live 3 blocks away and you're supporting a small business, but people don't look at it that way, which is why Walmart is the biggest thing on the fucking planet. So, but I won't get into politics of that shit. So. But anyway, so yeah, it's fun, man, you know.
So do you still read comics now?
Do I read comics now?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, not right at this moment, but
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
talking
yeah.
to me, but
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm still reading them. You know, I'm still reading the same stuff like I was before. Still into Nova. Wait, you know, I'm digging that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm digging that new Nova series. It's getting better. I was a little shaky on it last time we talked, and I first started.
Right. I remember that.
And,
I put through it. I'm thanks to John Michael. I mean, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm still digging Nova. Nova's doing really good. Still sticking on with Superior Spider-Man, although that's purportedly coming to
I dropped
to
that
it.
A long time ago.
Did you? Yeah, it's been up and down, but now it's kind of getting good. And
it's going to be Amazing Spider-Man again, but it's still going to be Dan Slott writing it.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's going to be Peter Parker again, right?
As far as I am to understand, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the latest issue I read, I'm not sure if this is the newest one, the latest issue I read of Superior was number 28. So, I mean, they're still doing that. So, you know, I've heard different stories and everything. I try not to do too many spoilers for myself with that because I like to be surprised, and it's hard nowadays. Another good one, where do I have it? I actually have them here because I bring comic books everywhere with me. I like All New X-Men. I don't know if you've read any of that. Bendis's X-Men. I'm that's been a little up and down, but I'm digging that. You know, I was a big fan of the old X-Men. You know, the Silver Age, Lee and Kirby X-Men. So it's cool to see them go back to that, but with this whole new twist. And
it's nice to see Jean Grey back.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's very cool, and
That's the only way they can. I mean, whether right. Well, she didn't really die. Well, she did die. Don't fuck that up.
But. Well, how many times has she died? I don't know. Right. I mean, it's Marvel Universe. There's only one or two characters I think that are mandated cannot really be brought back, you know, and that's Uncle Ben and to a lesser extent Gwen Stacy. Although I know they've, you know, fucked with that a little bit over the years, you know.
Right, they did.
Because they invented clones and,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
That's an easy way out.
You think? Yeah. But I could do a whole thing just talking about the damn clone saga, but I won't.
I'm actually really enjoying the new Guardians of the Galaxy by Bendis.
I've only kind of cursorily read it a little bit. You know, I'm so backed up on stuff that I've just mm-hmm. been sticking to, like my main books, like Nova, the Spidey books. You know, like I said, I picked up on this all new X-Men. I've been popping in and out of the Avengers books and stuff. And
right, yeah, me too. Some of I hate to say it, some of the Avengers stuff is not. I don't know if it's some of the writers they have for it now, but I don't know. It's just not grabbing me like it should after the reboot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Do you buy digitally at all, or is everything, you know, you buy in a store? You buy actual comics?
I buy like 95% real comics. Okay. Now and then, if I'm in a position, you know, especially with me traveling and, you know, different stuff. I mean, I've got an iPad, you know, I do read comics on there. I have shitloads of, digital back issues and stuff on there.
Yeah.
That, you know, things that I actually own in both formats and everything. But I'm not against digital comics. I think it's cool. Whatever. Hey man, whatever keeps the medium afloat, I'm for it. Just keep making comics, you know, just keep writing them and drawing them and I'm good. But, yeah, I don't read too many digital ones, you know, now and then I'll pick them up, but I usually, even when I do, it's usually just kind of like on an interim. And then when I get a chance, I go and I pick up the actual physical comic. I love the paper, man. I love the smell of them.
Yeah.
I'm holding them. I love turning the page, you know,
a lot of them now they, if you buy the comic, you actually get like the digital version with it. And,
right. Right. Yeah.
And the I guess, what do they call it? When you can, you like the Marvel app.
Yeah.
And you can, there's so much bonus material you can get out of buying the real comics.
Yeah. And that's great. I think that's a brilliant idea. And that's the kind of thing that I'm seeing, even, you know, bringing it back around to music again. It's the kind of thing I'm seeing happen like more and more, even with like music, where now people are putting out, say, like, you know, a vinyl album of their new record. And then you can get like a downloadable version
right.
too. And sometimes you even get like extra stuff if you download and, you know, the extra liner notes or lyrics or whatever it is, you know. And I think that's a brilliant idea. I think, you know, you tell me that for one reasonable price, I can get the best of all of it. You know, I can get a collectible physical item to hold in my hand and everything. And at the same time, get the downloadable media, you know, to take with me and everything, man, I'm sold. I'm all.
Yeah, totally. And I'm glad it's going that way.
Yeah, I am too. I think it's about time. I think that people need to start getting smarter about business. In all forms of entertainment media, you know, but mm-hmm. Speaking for me personally, because it's my main thing in music, I think it's time people start getting a little smarter. The record labels and the management and the bands themselves too. Everybody needs to start waking up a little bit, because as we all know, nobody's selling CDs like they used to anymore. And
yeah.
That's, you know, for better or for worse, I'm not going to get into that argument, but it's, you know, it's largely because of the internet and the economy and et cetera, et cetera. But the point of the matter is people aren't really buying CDs so much anymore. So bands are now all scrambling to get out on the road and kill themselves touring all the time. And I'm not knocking touring. Touring's cool and it's great and it's helpful, but everyone is on tour. I mean, have you noticed, Carrie, that all of a sudden all these bands that you never used to see tour before. Now they're just touring and coming through like as much as they possibly can on any show they can, in any club they can. And to a degree, that's great. That's great for guys like us that go want to see a band and go, oh, awesome, now they're coming through. But on the other side of it, I also know how much it's costing and what the end result is, all of it is going to be. And what's going to happen is there's only so many hours a day. There's only so many days a month, and there's only so much money in people's wallets that people aren't going to be able to go to all the shows they want to go to.
Yeah.
And
it really is.
Yeah. I mean, you go through it. I'm sure I go through it. You know, there's so many, you end up missing more shows than you actually attend because there's so many of them. And it's because the only way bands are making any money anymore is by going out on tour.
And having to charge a lot for the tour.
Yeah, and you see now, even like a lot, even some underground bands, like, you know, in my genre and all that stuff, are charging a lot of money, and people get pissed, and I don't blame them for getting pissed because it's a lot of money to me too. But at the same time, I know how much it's costing just trying to keep the band afloat, just trying to stay alive, just trying to keep doing this because we're not getting money from labels like we used to, and we're not getting money from sales, and we're not, you know, so everybody's resorting to touring all the time, and that bubble's gonna burst, man, in the next 5 years. It's just gonna get to the point where, you know, bands aren't gonna be able to afford to keep doing this touring like they used to, because it travel's getting more expensive, and yet, you know, turnouts are getting smaller and smaller. Not for everybody. Some bands will always draw well. You know, there's always going to be the hyped bands. There's always going to be the classic bands that'll always do well. But for a lot of the rest of us, man, it's hard. And so the point I'm – sorry I'm rambling, but the point I'm getting at is – I know I do that. But the point I'm getting at, and I'll wrap it up here, is people have to start thinking about new ways of getting product and getting interest out there, you know, and back at you from the fans and potential fans. And the internet is the way to do it. Digital media, all that kind of stuff. That's the way to do it. And I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see more bands being creative with the way they're advertising and getting things out there, you know, like, I mean, you saw, like we talked at the top of the episode when you were saying about, you know, the videos that I've been putting together, you know, for the studio. I mean, it's easy to do. It's relatively, it takes a little time, but it's easy to do. And people dig that shit. You know, people, it gets them invested. I say give people as much as they can. I also mentioned to you when we were off air about another thing, that another project that Doom is working on that's going to involve digital, you know, media and stuff that will hopefully be getting out there sometime soon. And, you know, we're just going to start really focusing on that. I mean, we're still going to put out CDs, and we're still going to put out vinyl when we can, and we're still going to go out and play shows because, you know, who doesn't love playing shows, man? You know, we love playing shows. But, yeah, all these things. And the same thing, you know, I love seeing, like, Marvel and, you know, companies like that now offering stuff when you pay that $4. Because $4 is a lot to pay for a comic book, man.
It really is.
You know, and that's affected me a lot, too. Like, when you're asking me about if I've read this, I've read that. It's like, man, you know, I can't pick up on everything. You know what? Mm-hmm. Speaking of that and getting off my soapbox again, one thing I did pick
up. Let me help you step down a little bit.
Yeah. One thing I did pick up, speaking of comic books, is I picked up that new Romero Night of the Living Dead comic.
I haven't read that yet.
Yeah.
I've heard great things about it, though.
Yeah, that's cool, man. It's if you're into that kind of stuff, man, it's well done, you know. So I recommend that. That's another cool thing to check out.
Now, before going back a little bit to the digital thing, your vocalist, Paul Kerr, is also in another band called These Are They, and they just released a digital EP.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I picked that up on iTunes. It was like $2, man.
Right. And it's good.
Yeah, it's really good, yeah.
I mean, it's got Paul on it, but it's still good.
I'm not going to say anything there, man.
I had to get a little, you know, that's, you've been in a band together for as many years as we all have, you know, it's, you got to just fuck with each other, man, you know. It's, but no, it,
yeah,
these
I
are
think
there
I said
great.
This,
yeah.
Right, yeah, he's one of my favorite vocalists, so.
Yeah, no,
I love how clear and the clarity of his vocals, but being so utterly deep and guttural. It's
yeah,
not many people do it like him. Then
no, exactly. He's really good at what he does.
And we're not stroking any egos.
No. It couldn't pay me to stroke him. So, but anyway, no. But,
and it is turned for the worse.
Yeah,
really
you don't even know, man. See, we need to get the Doomcast up and running again.
Yeah, man.
And the November's Doom podcast. We haven't done that in like a year, and we've been meaning to get it. If we're gonna reboot it, we got to do it right. You know, we want to commit to it, and we've been so busy this past year and health things and all that, but we're going to get it back. But when we do get the Doomcast back up and running, we got to have you call in and be on there, because you don't even know the meaning of things snowballing fast into hell until you've been on the podcast with all of us. And
right,
it's just, yeah, it's,
I look forward to it.
It's really bad. Yeah. We'll definitely have you on there, because it's entertaining. And we talk about a lot of this stuff too, you know, but with a little bit of a different slant on a lot of
people,
yep, to say. But yeah, Paul, anyway, getting back to what you're bringing up, Paul and These Are They just put out that digital EP, and I'm not in the band, so I can't, you know, speak for them. But from what I understand, I believe it's done really well for them. Like, I think that they actually had a lot of interest, and that it sold pretty well, you know, when they first put it out, and got a lot of good response. And it's like, well, there you go. You know, there's just, you know, a testament to it. You know, these things can be done if you do it smartly and you're a little bit more forward thinking, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. So, let's go ahead and wrap up the episode. I really want, before we stop, I'll definitely be remiss if we did not mention the passing of one of the comedy greats.
Oh yeah, Harold Ramis. Yeah,
Harold Ramis passed away a couple weeks. It's been a couple weeks now, but man, grew up watching him in Ghostbusters, and one of my favorite movies of all time is Groundhog Day.
Oh yeah, that movie.
He was like the straight man. He was the one that was there so everybody else could get their laughs off of him, basically. But he had some really great lines in some of his movies, man.
Yeah, not to drag it out too long, but out of curiosity, like, what would you say is like your, like, if you had to real quick pick like your top two or three like favorite of like movies / roles of his, like, what would you say they were?
Well, you definitely have to say Egon.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, what about you? I mean, give me your top
two. I love Stripes.
Yep.
You know, that was definitely one of my favorite performances, and amazing writing in that one. Yeah, the first Ghostbusters, you know, that's just Jesus. I mean, do I have to even explain, you know?
No.
He's
going to do a great job in Ghostbusters 3 too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame. Yeah. I mean,
it is a shame that they couldn't get together on it, you know?
And I'd probably say Groundhog Day, just because that's what a brilliant concept, you know, and, you know, everything about that movie is just, resonates with a lot of people, you know. I mean, it's hilarious too, but just so cleverly done and everything. So those would probably be my three.
I mean, look at his career as a director. I mean, you got Caddyshack and National Lampoon's Vacation.
Oh, yeah.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true, man. Fucking Caddyshack. God.
Yeah.
That movie is so fucking brilliant, too.
I mean, Stewart Saves His Family, man. Come on. No.
Yeah.
He had a couple of bombs, but...
I wouldn't even necessarily say they're bombs. They're just, you know, they appeal to different people for different reasons. I think nearly everything that guy had his hands in, there was, whether it was your cup of tea or not, you had to sit there and say, you know, okay, this guy's, you know, clever. He's smart.
Oh yeah. And I loved Second City Television, SCTV.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He had some, that was if you've never seen SCTV, I used to watch it as a kid on reruns on probably like Nick at Night and things like that.
Yeah.
But my God, man, some of the best comedy. That's where like Kids in the Hall got their, you know, in basically where they got their whole shtick from.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Second City, you know, you had Harold Ramis and who else was on that? John Candy
and
Rick Moranis.
Right. Moranis and
Martin Short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and Short was on, SNL.
Mm-hmm.
And everything too. So I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, the both of those SNL and Second City stuff. Well, I mean, hey man, Chicago. You know, there's a lot of those cats were from Chicago. But you know,
that is true.
From Second City. So I got a lot.
I've actually been to the Second City in Chicago once.
Oh,
it was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's cool. I've never been. I've actually never been. Yeah. I've never. I've only been to like comedy clubs maybe once or twice in my life for whatever reason. You know. Which is a shame because I love comedy stuff. You know, my taste in comedy is a little weird sometimes. You know?
Right.
My favorite comedian is, if not my favorite of all time, but one of my favorites got to be Mitch Hedberg.
Oh yeah.
Because he was just so sad that he's gone. Not surprising, but sad. But you know, so good. I like those kind of go figure. You know, metal guy, kind of rock guy. I'm going to be drawn to the Sam Kinisons and the Mitch Hedbergs and stuff like that. You know, so
can't even imagine, man. So I think we've run a pretty great gamut of different topics in this episode.
Yeah, well, that's typical for you and I. You know, and
totally, man.
And check it out, we didn't once even mention the fucking monkeys.
Oh shit! Wait a minute, do we have another half an hour?
No, we don't. But that's still a pending.
That is, I've actually episode, been cultivating a playlist that we need to go through. Once I'm finished that, we need to get John Michael to actually sit through here and listen to all the tracks.
Yeah.
And then we can discuss it.
Yeah, because we need him there for that third,
yeah.
You know, that other opinion. Yeah, definitely.
I know, because if it's just me and you, we're going to be like, oh, this song's the best in the world. And you'll be like, yeah, that is the best song. And he'll be like, he can actually give his real opinion.
Yeah. He's going to be like, so, what the fuck are you guys listening to?
Do you know there's this episode will come out this week. So next weekend, there was a Monkees convention in, I think, New Jersey.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God, man.
Monkees convention in New Jersey.
In New Jersey.
I can just imagine the people.
I've actually, a long time ago, about, I don't know, I can't even remember the year, but I went to a Monkees convention in California. That's where I bought my piece of artwork that was done by Mickey Dolenz.
Right. That's awesome.
Met Amy Dolenz that year, but this year, Mike Nesmith is actually going to be there doing autographs and doing a performance.
That's
Peter
Torres
was doing autographs. Yeah.
Wow.
And here's our half an hour.
Here we go. We're going to do that.
But, you know, if I lived anywhere near that, I'd definitely be going, man.
Yeah, I would check that out, too, just because that surprises me. That, I mean, Torque's one thing, but seeing Nesmith involved, that's...
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the passing of Davy Jones, where he's like, oh, we have all the time in the world to do what we need to do with this band, and it's not true. Everybody's getting older.
Well, you know, it's a shame that it took that to get Nesmith off, you know, to get the stick out of his ass, but...
Yeah. Get off the high horse.
Yeah.
He's from Texas. You know.
But, yeah, that's true.
But everybody in Texas does have a horse. You know that.
Yeah.
I remember doing an interview with a long time ago for Mainstream Resistance with Immortal. And they seriously asked me if I had a horse and what my horse's name was. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, all right. Dude, I've actually met and... I don't want to say hung out, but kind of hung out. I had a drink with Abbott before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what a fucking character that guy is.
Yeah.
I love him. I love that band. I love the fact that they don't take themselves too seriously.
Have you seen all the Abbott memes going around the internet?
Oh, yeah.
Like, taking a bath?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's some funny shit.
A bath. A shower. Yeah. He's, man.
The Oscars one that's going around now? That's fucking funny.
And the selfie, yeah, that was perfect. Yeah, no, he's a great guy. I think if you go on my Facebook, I've got a couple. There might be a picture or two of me and him hanging out.
So, what other podcast can you listen to that will go from the monkeys to immortal in the span of 15 seconds?
None.
Exactly.
And that's why
get it here.
This is the best, man.
Well, definitely thank you for coming on and being my guest host this evening. Of course, our regular guest host, John Michael, JM Metal Geek, is getting married this coming weekend. So all good luck to him, and you deserve all the best, man. We look forward to hearing all about it
later on. Good luck, you sad bastard.
Let's give everybody, if they don't know how to get a hold of us, I'll let you go first.
Oh, to get in touch with me and Doom? Easy, man. Just go to either look us up on Facebook, which, you know, I don't know what it is, facebook.com/novembersdoom. I think that's it, or it's November's Doom 1989, one of those. I know, go to our YouTube channel where you can check out the aforementioned studio videos. That is the account on YouTube is November's Doom 1989, all one.
I just looked it up. It is the same on Facebook as
yeah,
well.
That's what I thought. Okay, I should know this shit, but, you know, I'm old and I forget things. those are the easiest ways to get in touch with us. Even you leave comments on YouTube, we almost always, as long as you're polite, we will reply to them, you know, directly. Same on Facebook, you know, we more than happy to talk to people and answer your questions, or, you know, anything you want to know, merch or just general questions or just what I ate for breakfast, I don't give a shit. You know, we will usually answer you. We like talking to the fans and making friends and genuinely do become friends, you know, with a lot of them. So, I mean, please contact us and look us up. And hopefully, like I said, new album Blood White should be out through the End Records this summer.
Cool. Thank you, man. So let me give a quick little plug for one of our sponsors. If you are looking for any kind of Funko Pop vinyl toys, look no further than thevinyldead.com. You can go on there and put in the code MetalGeeks10 and save 10% off your entire order.
Oh, that's kick ass. I'm totally going to. I love those toys, so I'm totally.
Oh, man. JM has got me addicted to those little vinyl suckers, man.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, those are really hot. And they've got some really cool. I've seen a lot of the new stuff that's coming out and everything in catalogs and online everything. So
the Ghostbusters set coming out.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's timely for you. You know?
Timely. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds like a great deal. So people should totally check that out. I'm going to.
And you can find us again at www.metalgeekspodcast.com to keep up with all the new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Metal Geeks, at JM Metal Geek, or at MSRcast. You can find us now on Instagram at Metal Geeks Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the Metal Geeks Podcast on iTunes. Leave a review and like us while you're there. You know, it only helps to build the numbers, man.
Absolutely.
And if you're also looking for other places on the internet to find us, altness.com and rhymeswithgeek.com. And pay all of our sponsors and all of our websites there a visit. And, of course, visit November's Doom on the internet. Look forward to the new album coming out sometime this summer. That's with air quotes.
Yeah, hopefully. That's what we're shooting for.
Thank you, sir, for being our very special guest host on this episode. And we will have that Monkees episode very, very soon.
Yeah, we that's a, you know, a goal. We have to make sure we do that, you know, sometime in 2014 we'll get that.
Exactly, man.
So.
Cool. Thank you very much. And as I say to all my listeners and to all the guests that come on, keep it geeky. And to you, sir, I will say keep it metal.
Thanks, man. Stay metal. Stay true.
Hey, Geekazoids! Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit MSRcast.com. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.